This is episode
45.
Is that 45? Six away. We will hit 50 by the end of this year. That's the plan to get there. 45. And I think that's not too bad. Like, if we're averaging one episode a fortnight over 2 years,
I think that's a good average.
I'm actually really happy with that.
It's a better average than any Australian cricketer. And we can kiss that.
He said it with such authority that I don't dare question him about that.
I believe him on that one.
Oh god!
Any current Australian cricketer?
Any current Australian cricketer? All right. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode number 45 of the Board Game Gateway Podcast. My name is Niba, and I'm your host for this evening's endeavor into the world of cricketing board game. Apparently, if you listen to the intro, you'll get that into the world of board gaming and fun times. Sitting around the table, I have three lovely co-hosts of mine, and they are straight ahead. Oh, and a dog apparently shaking in the background there. I have Mr. Blake right in front of me.
Hello.
Next to him is Mr. Ralph.
Hey.
And across the table from him is Mr. Damien.
Hello.
Coincidentally, you are to my right as well.
He's the 14th.
That's how squares work.
I know. 4 points, 4 lines. Also, how diamonds work. Are we sitting in a square or a diamond? I don't know.
You'll never know. Also, lovely, really?
I've been saying that for a couple of weeks now. Yeah, I called Rob lovely. So yeah, he was like, I've never been called lovely before. And I'm like, well,
he called the hobo across the road lovely as well. So I don't know if it's a compliment at all.
I mean the messages in the back row still keep coming. I don't think they turned him down yet, but you know, sure.
I mean he's lovely. What can I say?
He brings board games over.
Oh god, if this is the first time that you're listening to the podcast, we are your entryway into the world of board gaming and fun times. And on tonight's episode, we are going to be having a chat about a couple of games. We're going to be Blake and I are going to give you our first impressions of Hegemony.
Yes.
Lead your class to victory is the tagline, and that's apparently the full title every time I teach it, because you can't just type Hegemony in because it takes you down a weird political rabbit hole. So I wouldn't do that. We also have a very exciting announcement at the end of this one, so keep your we'll be waiting to the end of that. Our gateway game of the week this week is Sheriff of Nottingham. We have some fun stories about this. Ralph and Damien, it's been a hot minute since we've seen each other. What are the games that you've been playing over this last 2 weeks, I guess it is, since we've released our last podcast?
Yeah, that's fair.
It has been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while.
God, it feels like it's been so long.
Blake hasn't been on for a while more, I think.
He's a big one. Look, behind the curtains, I legitimately forgot Blake was rocking up to the recording tonight.
He's like, who's Blake? It's been so long.
I was like, he rocked up and I'm like, oh, Blake's here. Oh, that changes my configuration for the podcast. Okay.
Ruins everything.
Thanks, Blake.
You're all welcome.
But yeah, I guess Damien and I got our game of Frosthaven to the table. It's been a while. I know I haven't gotten back to you about our two-player campaign so much lately.
That game was very rough. I felt very, very dusty playing that game.
But our four-player campaign is going quite well.
Yep. Love that.
So yeah, quite a few cool little surprises there. So still really enjoying Frosthaven.
Love that.
Had a night of Clock Towering as well, which Ooh. We just played the base script of. But that was a lot of fun too. I always find it's the new players that deceive me. It's like you try and teach them the rules to the game and they act stupid, but they know.
I unfortunately couldn't go to that one because that was on our opening night of the show that I'm in. It's actually one of the reasons why our release schedule has been so shoddy over the past couple of months, because I've been in the prep for that. But
beautiful.
Looking at that demo. What about yourself? How have you been? What have you played? The answer, I hope, is a lot.
I have been playing a lot, actually.
Ooh, it was.
So that's right. Going back to Ralph and I've had it. We also played TI online.
We did. I'm still playing, I think, two games of TI,
which resulted in me not messaging Ralph for a day. So I needed to just decompress for a bit.
You need that.
They are playing with my cousin Tom as well in one game.
Which, by the way, I don't want to say on record, Tom is a gentleman, because I offered him a way out in this particular game. I'm like, hey, take my support for the throne. Just win the game. Just win the game. Just take it. And he's like, nah, that's not my style.
And he wants to win by a knife in the back.
No, but literally the next turn, some other player won just by taking a support for the throne.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, like, TI is still... I still have very much a mixed response with TI. I know people at the table enjoy it more than what I do. Great game. But yes, I always find that I need to decompress after that, and I typically have to walk away.
Yeah.
Still doing sort of playing games with my kids. My youngest daughter is starting to get more and more interested in games. We've been playing Azul.
Yes.
More games of Jaipur with my son. Spot It with my youngest son. That's been regularly getting to the table.
Yeah, Spot It's quite good. I don't know how that works on Board Game Arena. I haven't tried it
I
yet.
Have tried it. It's fast finger with the clicking.
Oh,
it's
it is.
It's got to be fast finger. Yeah. It still sucks just as much as being on board. You're like, what the hell is it?
Yeah, yeah. It's just great when you have a seven-year-old sitting across from you and just goes, horse. It's like, kids
are so quick at it. Oh, it's so like they don't even give you a chance to see it or validate what they said. They can say anything they want.
Shark, and he just takes it.
What?
Sure. Okay, fine. All right. Yeah, so we have the animal version of Spot It. Spot It comes in a number of different flavors, but the reason why we picked the animal version is just because when my younger son was even younger, he had a few issues with speech, but animals were always a winner. He always knew how to identify animals. That. So was that. So a number of really sort of family-friendly games, but I've been so happy to play Azul. It's just so great that my kids are finally into it. But the biggest surprise for me was I went to a game day a couple of weeks ago, taught Trick Taker Aurum, which is a fun one that is coming out now-ish. Interesting Trick Taker where you must not follow as opposed to you have to follow.
You were telling me about this and I sound like I would love to hate this game.
It basically breaks some of the rules of trick taking and it forces people to think differently.
I like that.
Very, very interesting. looking forward to play more of that. But the big winner for me was Cthulhu Death May Die. That was the biggest surprise for me. It was a game that I didn't think I'd ever enjoy. So Cthulhu Death May Die, it's a CMON game, so a ton of minis, so on and so forth. One of the designers is Eric Lang, designer of one of my favorite games, Blood Rage. And what you are doing the same thing that you do in other Cthulhu-based games. You play an investigator. You are trying to kill a monster. You have to do something before you get the chance to kill the monster. Every round, something bad happens. It's never good. And you have to deal with that throughout the game. Arkham Horror LCG has very much the same format. Elder Sign, Arkham Horror 2nd and 3rd edition.
Marvel Dagger has the same thing.
Eldritch
Horror?
Elder Sign. And also Eldritch Horror has a similar mechanic as well. Yep. So, but what makes Cthulhu Death May Die different to a number of these games? I think the best way I can explain it is that imagine Arkham LCG with less story and imagine Elder Sign but faster.
Okay.
And you have Cthulhu Death May Die.
Sounds good.
So I played the little girl. It was fantastic.
What was her name? Did you give her a name?
She was literally called the girl.
That's straight out of a horror movie. And
you look at the photo of her, she just looks absolutely possessed. She has a fireball in one hand. It's like, yes, okay, this is going to be amazing. At the beginning of the game, you draw a weakness. Mm-hmm. And that is unique to everyone.
Yep.
And what my weakness was that every time my insanity increased, if I was in a room with anyone else, I would become more and more exhausted. Exhaustion is what you use to alter the value of dice.
Being crazy with other people is so exhausting.
Exactly
guys.
Right.
It's so exhausting being crazy with other people.
That is the whole thematic tie-in.
Yeah, yeah.
But the premise of the game is this. Every round, you take three actions. Mm-hmm. The actions could be fight, rest, run. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Cool.
Okay. Also, investigate. Apologies, there was another one. And what you do is if there are cultists or any other
monsters
in the room, you can say, I'm going to fight. You roll your three base dice plus any bonuses that you happen to pick up via your character upgrades. Every character has three rows of upgrades. It's probably not possible to max out all three, but I'll leave those who are more experienced with the game than me to correct me on that.
Mm-hmm.
And you roll your dice. Any hits, they count as hits against the monsters. Misses are just blank sides. There's also anything with the elder sign. Some characters respond differently to elder sign. So an elder sign may count as a hit,
mm-hmm.
or it may count as a way to you improve your health, or so on and so forth. If every character has a slightly different ability.
Yep. Yep.
The last one is horror. Just like in Arkham, where every time you take on horror, you are getting closer and closer to the end of your game.
Right.
This does the same thing. However, that also ties into your upgrade cycle. The only way you can upgrade your character is to slowly become more and more insane.
Okay.
And the cool part is that at certain intervals, as you become more and more insane, you get more dice. Right. So you get more powerful, but you are increasing the chances of you just becoming more and more insane. Cool. And you have no option as to whether or not you want to roll only some of these dice. You have to roll all of these dice. So at one point, my character was literally an insane human wrecking ball. I was rolling 10 dice at one point, going insane at an alarming rate and having the time of my life.
Sounds good.
I laughed for 90 minutes straight during this game. It was brilliant. I loved it so much so that I bought a copy the following
day. Oh, wow.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think that's what I really loved about Too Many Bones.
Yeah.
The absurdity of how many dice you can get to roll.
Yeah.
Arkham Horror does, the LCG, does have some cards where, okay, if you have three or fewer sanity, like if you have three life left, you can play this ridiculous card. Yeah. But it's so situational in a methodical, strategic game.
Yeah.
Whereas that just sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, unlike Arkham, and I couldn't see a way, certainly with my character and the other two characters that they were at the table,
yep.
of ever reducing our horror.
Yeah.
Whereas in Arkham,
you're always LCG, down to that point.
You're always down to that point. Yeah. Now, you, at the end of every round, you draw a mythos card, which represents the bad things happening.
Yeah.
The game working. And then if you happen to be in a room where you are safe, you draw, you can also draw a different card. And assuming you can meet the criteria, you can either take one side of the card, which typically is a bonus. It could be a companion that you bring along with you.
Cool.
Puppy.
Or it could be something net negative that permanently impacts you for the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say is picking up the game, as someone who had played Arkham Horror LCG in the past, the rules were clear as glass.
They sound very similar.
It was very similar. It's like, this feels like Arkham. Let's go.
Let's roll.
but what I will say is that anyone who walks into this game expecting more Arkham, the story is not there.
Okay.
Yes, there is thematic tie-in, but the story is just not there.
Because I felt that with Mansions of Madness.
Yes.
The game is there. It has a theme. It has a story to it, but it's not really.
So would you say this is kind of like for the Cthulhu fan, but who doesn't really want to play with cards, just wants to play with dice more so?
I would say that, but I would actually take it a step further. Arkham Horror LCG, and I don't want to spend too much time comparing, but it's impossible to stay away from the comparison. Arkham Horror LCG shines. With anyone who wants to do deck building.
It's right. definitely more strategic.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Right. Absolutely. Like Arkham shines in trying to complete, even if it's just a side quest.
Right,
Even if it isn't a whole campaign where you say, all right, I'm going to give this a go with this character. And you say, I really need a way to evade more. Okay, I'm going to go back. I'm going to rebuild my deck. Go again, sort of thing.
Okay.
Or you can have it over a campaign and fix the little holes in your deck as you go.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, right.
I really have to show you guys this game at some point.
Whereas Cthulhu Death May Die is you get handed 18 different character cards, you go, pick one. They're all ridiculous. Okay. And then you get handed a weakness. I can't remember if it's called a weakness, but in my brain it's called,
a weakness card. Like some sort of handicap in a way.
And that's it. And that is random. And you say, okay, what are we doing? We're doing this scenario. And away you go.
So there's four scenarios in the box?
There are six scenarios and two different bosses. So even if you just played with the same investigators, there are 12 different combinations there.
Okay.
There are 18 different investigators.
And how long does this game take to play?
90 minutes, including a teach.
Yeah,
and
90
minutes. One of the players was very, very new to Arkham. Actually, sorry, we had four players. So we had someone come in.
Someone died.
No, sorry, apologies. I just remember we had someone come in halfway through the first round and they just jumped in and they went straight away. We basically just went,
oh, cool.
You're maybe a little bit insane. That's it. And away you go. And it was like great. That.
Yeah, just great. A little love bit insane. You're like Russell Brand insane.
That's
like,
it. Yeah. Just... and honestly, the game was over in 90 minutes. Yeah. And it was just...
That's great.
It was brilliant. Look, I love this game.
Sounds like I really have to play this.
Yeah, game. Look, it's just... it's
because I'm in an Arkham Horror game, just a solo game at the moment, just playing two-handed. Yeah. I'm playing the Scarlet Keys right now. I've almost finished it, but it's the type of game where... The story is fantastic, but you could be reading that story like it's a whole chapter in a book.
Yeah.
You know, like it can be a bit much at times, but that's fantastic. Honestly, it sounds great.
So we will play that.
Yeah, I'm keen.
Fantastic. Well, that was Cthulhu Death May Die, a recommendation from Mr. Damien, if ever I have heard one. We're going to be moving from the...
I reckon I'm going to call it top 10. That's Knee's number one game.
Could be. Probably. Could be. It's gonna have to dethrone this game, next game that we're gonna have to talk about though, because this is a contender for my top 10 coming into the end of this year. I'll tell you that much. It's in there. So we're gonna be moving from Cthulhu Death May Die now to from Lovecraftian horror, Eldritch horror. We're going to be moving into the world of socio-economic political tensions. That's where we're heading now with the game.
Sounds great.
So this game is called Hegemony, Lead Your Class to Victory. This is a Kickstarter game that is finally released and got to our shores. And I say finally made it to our shores. It got here 5 months ago and has been sitting on my shelf of shame all that time.
I'm glad you took a moment to because there were a lot of sounds in there.
Yep, we all heard it.
We should have heard it before this podcast. Seashells by the seashell.
Anyway, so this game is when I saw this on Kickstarter as in the beginning of 2022, I immediately backed it because this was one of the most unique games that I had seen in a long time. Now, what it is, Hegemony is a game, it's an asymmetrical card-playing Euro-style kind of game where up to four players, and my recommendation is you do need to play this at four.
Yes.
All of the players, we are part of a different class of people in a fictional country in the world. So one of us, for example, will be taking on the middle class, one will be the working class, one will be the capitalist class, and one will be playing as the state or the government. Okay.
Too real.
Yeah. The way in which we all
felt that way, definitely.
Yeah. The way in which we all score points is all different. So the working class, for example, they score points by making the working people prosperous. So they need to basically go and they need to send their people out into the world to go to jobs, so they can get paid wages from those jobs, and then they spend their wages on like healthcare, education, luxury goods, which in this game are depicted by phones, and then they spend those goods on their people, therefore making them more prosperous, and then therefore making them get you more victory points. The capitalist class, well, they need somewhere to go and work, this working class. So the capitalist class, your whole thing is about making money. So you are going to be making a whole bunch of different jobs and buildings that people can go and work at, and you get to set the wages of where people go and work at these things. So obviously you want to pay people as little as you possibly can, but you want people to still come here and work here because when they work there, they produce you goods. So people are going to come work for you. You have to pay them, but they also then produce you goods, which those people will in turn buy off you, right? In turn giving you more money, and the capitalist class makes more money, and that's how they score victory points. The middle class sits in the middle, and he does a bit of both of those things. He can send workers to work at some buildings to get wages, but he can also start his own little individual smaller businesses that he can run there and provide, make goods, buy goods, sell goods, etc., and also make his people prosperous. And then you finally have the last one is the government, essentially the state is what it's called. And the state just wants to keep everyone as happy as possible. They score points by gaining legitimacy, quote unquote, from the other three factions. And by doing that, when they get more legitimacy in their factions, everyone likes the government a bit more. Therefore, the government makes more money, right? That's the general overview. We're trying to just move pawns around the board to produce stuff, to buy stuff, to sell stuff, and everyone scores points in different ways. Where this game becomes really, really good is there is one part of the board, and this is called the political policy board, and there are seven different policies that dictate different things. The easiest one to understand is one of the policies is called the labor market, and it just dictates what the minimum wage of any of the businesses are. And so it starts in the game. In each of these policies have three different levels, level one, level two, and level three. Starts the game in level two, and that means that the capitalist, his minimum wage has to be the level two. He can never set it below that. However, one of his actions that he potentially could do is he could propose a bill that says, I want to lower the minimum wage. And then the game plays over five different rounds. There's an action round where we just do a whole bunch of stuff on the board. Then there's the production phase where we produce all the stuff that we just did. And then we have the political phase where we hold a whole bunch of elections on all of the different policies out on the board. And so you have to think, are you in favor or are you not in favor? So obviously the working class, they're not in favor because they want to get paid as much money as possible. But the middle class, he's sitting there and he's thinking, I don't know if I want to pay the working class a lot of money either.
Mm.
But that means I don't. So he has to make the choice.
But then you also have your own workers. So you're like, but I would like to get paid more. So, you know, if you're in this sort of middle ground where you can be pulled either way.
Yeah. And so there's a whole bunch of this stuff going on where the game itself is actually a very simple. It's a kind of a dichotomy of like different, you know, ups and downs, because it was one of the most intimidating teachers I've ever done, but it's a very simple game in its heart.
Yeah.
All you're doing is everyone has their own unique set of like deck of cards, and those decks are actions. And on your turn, you literally can play, you play a card down in front of you, and you can either do the action on the card, whatever it says, or you do a basic action.
Is that like you pre-plan it, or you just put the card and you do the thing?
When it's your turn, you do it. But everything happens in a specific order. The working class always gets the first action. So it goes working, middle, capitalist, Senate. No, the state, whatever. I am the Senate, right?
I was waiting for the slip up.
Thinking about it all the time, right? But then in the production phase, the state produces first, then the capitalist, and then because you need to be able to sell goods. So like the working class needs, they have to buy goods because they have to provide food for their population. And if you don't, you have to, you know, you get benefits. This, I'm going to stop talking about what the game is at this point, because this is our first impressions of what it is, because we only played two out of the five rounds. A couple of reasons. The teach took longer because I said this is going to be a rough teach just because I'm going to teach you all your individual stuff. We also started a bit late, so I was like, we're not going to finish this game up front. But Blake and I, he was part of this. You were the middle class and I was the state. I got to get, like, it. We both can't stop thinking about this game from the next day.
Definitely.
It's one of those games.
Mate, just from those first two rounds, I need to play this game again and very, very soon. It was a lot of fun. There's a lot of, I suppose, role-playing you can do with this game. One thing that stood out to me as a little bit different was with the voting system on these policies. You know, when you're only voting whether you're in favor. Now, the amount of power that you have is you've got these colored cubes which go into a baggie. And so all that happens in the voting is you mix up the baggie, you pull out five cubes, and whichever color gets split into whether that person was yay or nay. So you don't actually, there are ways to influence further.
I want to have.
To spend some influence further influence it. But it's pretty random on just because three people voted yay. Doesn't mean that that's the way it's going to go. Yeah. If the fourth person has a lot of, or just luck of the draw, you can get these sort of outcomes. So it's not like
game changing though?
Can be. So there are things like, so the fiscal, all the elections, so there are seven different policies that we're voting on, such as one of them is the fiscal policy, which basically says the state gets to also have buildings and they pay really, really well. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the capitalist doesn't want the public welfare just building a whole bunch of stuff, and one of the policies is the state can only start with the building with three, but they can potentially have up to nine buildings in play.
So say the state is clearly running away because of all these buildings they have. Can the other three classes gang up and
absolutely? Yeah. They can. Okay, cool. They can. Like, we already started doing that, right? We had this moment where we were just like, it felt like Mav, our friend who was playing the capitalist, was just raking in all of this money, and we're like, I literally said, do not vote for that because you're just making it cheaper for him to buy things and then he's going to sell them to you at a higher rate, making more money and giving him more victory points.
Well, I think he already set the tone even earlier than that. His first move of the game was to up the price of food, the most basic necessity
which is
item,
what the working
to
class
the
needs to, and the middle class both need to feed their populations that they've increasing. And so it's such a really fun game because everything is connected and everything makes sense.
That's the thing, because I was thinking with four asymmetric classes, like, is this just going to feel like Root, where people are on the map and like kind of doing their own thing?
It does not feel like that at all, because your class, it feels different. Like, I have different, I will say, so the very first game, it was like, obviously from a first impressions is we didn't understand what everyone was trying to achieve and how good it was that they would, how good they were doing. Because there was one moment with Mad the Capitalist, he was like, we thought he made so much money.
That's just his nickname.
But then he had to. But then he had to pay tax. But then he had to pay taxes and all the revenue that he made that round. Turns out that we thought he had like $80 in change. Turns out he only had like 32 because he had to pay 50 of it to the taxes, and the taxes feed the state's treasury.
Yeah.
And then the state treasury. So my coffers. I don't have a personal income. I just have the state treasury. So everyone has to pay taxes at the end of the round to the state. Right? And then the state can then like set the prices of different, you know, we had like free healthcare. So it meant that I was producing healthcare, and then the next round the middle class and the working class would immediately just come and snatch up as much of it as they could, like, give me more healthcare, that makes me good. Mav hated it because he wanted to sell education and healthcare, but he couldn't because they were taking it for free, right? So sounds, you can really only start cool to see where this game starts to become super, like, super crunchy.
You're trying to see what affects other players.
Yeah, so the game itself plays in about 3 to 3.5 hours. I put it at that rate of about a Terraforming Mars, a Brass Birmingham, an Eclipse, those kind of bigger games, right? Yeah. There is a lot here. But the game itself is literally, your action phase is you have 7 cards in hand, and you're going to choose one of them.
Mm.
Either play it for a basic action or play it for the action on the card. Go.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good.
It is really good.
And I think just going back to Ralph's question, in comparison to Root, I think where it avoids that sort of everyone just doing their own individual things is there's a lot of, even though they're all unique and different, the way they play, there's a lot of crossover in between. Not necessarily between all of them, but the capitalist crosses over with the middle class, and
middle class crosses with the working class.
And then and the state will also have the public sector where workers can also go work. So you're competing. The capitalist doesn't just own all of the means of production. He's competing with these other sectors at the same time. So it's sort of, people are trying to compete with each other. It avoids that, you know, everyone just playing their own sort of game.
And there are things as well, like the working class can go on strike, right? So if the capitalist sets his wages too low for a thing, so he's not paying out as much, the working class can go on strike, so he doesn't get any production.
Yeah, so I imagine there's ways to counter everything on the board, whether or not you want to or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, for example, the capitalist can go, you know what? The public sector has been providing me is providing all of the healthcare. I'm going to sell my healthcare building to get some money for this term because no one needs it. And then that may be a bad thing because maybe all of the healthcare was actually filled up. Yeah. And now the middle class and the working class are fighting over who gets the job at the public hospital, right?
Can you bribe people in this game?
See, and this is the part we don't know if this kind of makes sense. We only played 2 rounds, and we're like, it's not you. The negotiation, we did negotiate, and we had a bit of a negotiation. I said to Mav, the capitalist cast, I said, I will vote yes so long as you build this thing right away in this next round, and if you don't have my backing for your next bill, I don't care whatever it is.
Yeah, because what I love about games like TI or John's Company, you've got these like notes or cards promises or things other people can cash in on later on.
I did feel like that was
this type of game sounds like, oh, I'll scratch my back I'll scratch yours if you scratch my back sort of thing. A little bit.
That's what I definitely thought there was going to be a lot of going into it, but I mean, we did only play the 2 rounds, but it wasn't immediately obvious to us what exactly could be traded back and forth, what was worth it, what was
and I think we also would need to get a few more rounds in with the amount of production when we were like, so there's so much more stuff there. Like, there's immigration that brings more people onto the board faster or slower. There's, you can sell goods to the export markets, you can import from other markets, you can you know, change the price of healthcare and all this other stuff, and education, change the price of so much of the other stuff. Like, you know, the UN, the theoretical UN comes in and steps in if the state goes into default and they've, you know, been taking too many loans, right? There's so much of this stuff that goes on, and it is, It was so good. It was really good. And we're just like, we need to finish it on again. The reason why it's such an intimidating teach, though, is because it is so asymmetric, which is the actual game I could teach you in 20 minutes. It's not a hard game to understand. But then I'd need to say, this is what your actions are, and here's why you care.
But I think also to play the game well, you kind of need an understanding of what everyone does.
Absolutely. Right. And so we're in the middle of the game, and Blake goes, I don't care what happens. At some point, I need to play the state. He was looking at me going, I don't care what the fuck. Like, I need to do what you're doing. This is like a lot of fun. He was enjoying himself, but he's like, and I was like, I want to be the capitalist. I want to go over and start selling stuff and see what happens. So, look, we're looking forward to coming back and telling you how this game is after we've played a full run of this game. But for the moment, this is a huge thumbs up. It is a heavy game, yes, and it is a very like an intricate game. But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
I can't wait to get it back to the table.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to it. All right. Anyway, we're going to move now from the fictional country of Contrandia. I had to stop myself from stopping over that word there for a second. I was like, fake Landia or whatever the country we're going from. We're now going to go to another fake land, the Forest of Nottingham. That's a fake place, isn't it?
Nottingham's a real place.
No, it is. I know. I'm just...
No, it isn't.
I could have kept the bit going, but no, I'm being a bit facetious is the word I'm thinking of there. We're going to be talking about Sheriff of Nottingham. Damo, take us through what you have there in front of us, this box.
Sheriff of Nottingham is the game you put in front of kids when you want to teach them how to lie. Hands down.
I couldn't have said it better. That's exactly what this game is.
It's exactly what it is. So if you want to sit around a table and watch your kids lie to you straight to your face and even try and bribe you, this is the game that you put in front of them. Okay, so Sheriff of Nottingham is played over a number of rounds, typically with
two rounds around the table. Everyone gets to be the sheriff twice.
Unless you're playing with three players, then it's three times. Yeah. But what you are doing on your turn, if you are not the sheriff, you are trying to get your goods across the sheriff's
checkpoint.
Thank you very
into
much.
Into the market. We all have a market stand and we all want to sell goods at our market.
And what we have here to trade is we will have a handful of cards, a maximum of six cards. Fortunately, my box tipped over to the side and our cards are everywhere. And the cards basically come in two flavors. You either have cards that have a green border and they are goods that you are trying to get across.
Allowed goods.
Or you have cards with a red border. They are contraband.
Contraband
are amazing. Contraband come in the form of silk, mead. There is pepper and crossbows.
Also, emperor's mead in the... Yeah, you've got like
in
all... The,
yeah, and you also have... there is a third subclass of cards, which are... I think they're called palace goods, if I remember
right.
Yeah,
like they're like the gold and stuff. They're just like the one-off bonus cards, which are worth a lot of coins.
But they are more so modifiers for endgame scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Endgame scoring, you ask? What is it? It is cash at the end of the game. That's it. Whoever has the most cash wins.
Each card has a coin value.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what you are doing on your turn, you are taking some of the cards in your hand and you're putting it in your bag.
Oh, that's cute.
Maximum five cards.
Everyone gets a little baggie.
Yes. And you are putting a maximum of five cards in the bag.
I've never played this.
Oh, God. I thought you had played this, Ralph. Oh, no.
And so what you do is you will put a number of cards in the bag secretly.
And then you close it with the pop. You close the pop. The pop rivet.
You have to.
I'm going to give this to me.
Thank you.
And then... whoever the sheriff is.
No, you have to close it.
In this case,
I know, but you got to close it. You still weren't listening.
Oh, I see.
You have to close it. And you basically put the bag in front of the sheriff. So every other player on the table will do that. And they will declare what is in their bag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There is a ton of room for role play in this game.
All bags will be checked at the sheriff's...
When you say declare stuff, do I have to say there's silk, there's bread?
So what you are doing is you
stuff.
You can only declare one thing. So I can say there are four apples in here, and that's it. Or I can say there are three bread in here.
Yes, okay. and basically you have one of three scenarios in this case. Now, you can basically tell the sheriff, hey, I've got four apples in my bag.
In the bag.
And the sheriff could go, I don't believe you.
And
open the bag.
This happens.
The moment the sheriff opens the bag,
the moment that sound happens,
they have to open it up.
Negotiations have ceased.
Now, if it turns out that you had four apples in the bag, you basically get the apples, you look at the sheriff square in the eye, and you say, look, I am totally honest. I don't know what's wrong with you. I don't know how you could have possibly have doubted me. You take those apples and you put them by your marker.
And the sheriff then also has to pay you a stipend for the outrage of him not having believed you.
What do they pay?
Every card has two values on it. It has a cost in the top row and a penalty in the bottom right-hand corner.
Every card.
So if let's say hypothetically I did say four apples and the sheriff checked it and there were indeed four apples, the sheriff would have to pay me two penalty for every apple. So I've got
eight gold.
Eight gold. In addition, I have an extra 8 gold worth of apples here. So that's 16 gold to the net on my side.
What if I had four cards there and two were apples? And
here we go. This is option number two.
Scenario number two. Let's say you had this scenario where you had two apples, a barrel of meat.
Of contraband.
I love how Gouda cheese is contraband.
And cheese. Now, the thing to keep in mind is that you have to declare only one good.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
Even though you may have multiple goods that are all considered, that are all not contraband. For
bread, even though there may be a cheese and apples and bread.
Doesn't matter. What happens in that case, if the sheriff checks it, anything that is what you said it was that goes by your board,
you still get it.
Everything else, you have to pay the penalty to the sheriff. So in this scenario, I had two apples. I said there were four apples, but no, there was a cheese and there was mead. I have to pay the sheriff $6 in penalty. So four for the mead and two for the cheese.
Oh, okay.
At that point, the sheriff will then distribute these to the discard pile, however he seems fit. There are two discard piles in front of the table.
That does matter.
And that matters. And I will get to that soon. The third scenario is the best scenario.
It's my favorite scenario.
Is where the sheriff is about to reach for your bag and you go, and this sheriff, happened. Sheriff.
So I pass this to you, Blake. And I go, Blake, there are four bread in there. Oh, really? But wait, before you decide to pop it, how about I give you, you've been working so hard and I give you five silver to not look in that bag.
And about
five shillings, and we forget the name.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Better welcome yet. To Port Royal, Mr. Smith. Thank you so much.
So when you bribe the sheriff, if the sheriff takes the bribe, he or she is not allowed to open up the bag, but takes the bribe. However, you don't just, you can also bribe with things that are on your board. You can even bribe with things that are inside the bag. You can tell the sheriff.
There are four bread in here.
Yeah, four bread. But you say, you know what? I don't want you looking in the bag. Open it though. Take the very, very back card. That's yours as a thank you for us working well together. And they can do that. They can open the bag. As long as they don't look in, they can take the very back card, keep it to themselves. And if it turns out to be contraband, it's face down in front of them. It's points for them.
Only the sheriff knows what it is. But I can also go, you know what, Blake? There are four apples in there. And you know what? If you let that through, I'll give you two of them. Right?
Okay.
Thank you very much. And you go, yep, you pass it back. I pop the thing for bread. There's no apples in there, my friend. I don't want to give you anything, right? I got you. Like, literally, this game. So, for people who are listening at home, right, this game, like, will probably remind you of, it basically sounds like the game Bullcrap, Bullshit, whatever you play, the card variation, whatever or not. This is essentially that game with a bit more rules. But the role-playing and the little bit of rules that come in when you play it just is chef's kiss. Yeah. It is so good with this.
What's stopping me from putting four silk in a bag, which is contraband, and say, Nee, the sheriff, there's four silk in a bag.
You can't declare contraband.
You have to declare a good.
Contraband can never be declared because then if you go, well, there's four silk in there, I'll just go, well, that's contraband. Bang, pay me the penalty, you idiot. What are you doing?
But what if I say there's four silk in there and there's five apples?
Well, you can't ever declare contraband.
Okay. Yeah, you can't. Okay. Now,
but also, that's not what you said it was, so therefore you'd also have to pay the penalty on all the apples anyway.
Oh, really?
Because you
only have to declare one card, though.
One type. Whatever it is that you declare, then you have to pay the penalty for everything else.
Now, so
if I give you a bag that's got, that I tell you there's one apple in it, but there's four cheeses, like good cheeses, whatever another good product is, Does the four cheese get through?
I believe you always have to call the number has to be correct.
Like, yeah, the
I
can't, number has to
so
be
I can't correct. Hand you one card, four cards, and say there's one apple in there. Like, if I hand you four cards, I have to tell you.
I have to say this because one thing.
You could play it safe, and I could just go, you know what, Ralph?
Yeah, of course.
There are two apples in there.
Yeah.
But then why is he only going two apples? Mm. Maybe he's trying to get contraband across the line, and he's trying to make it seem like it's a safe play.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Or
does someone go, I got five bread there. And he's like, you don't have five bread in your hand. What the hell is going on? This is the whole game.
I know I've interjected quite a few times.
No, it's fine. I love
what
it.
What are the two discard piles?
That's where I was getting to. So discard piles, the discard piles come into play after a round of negotiation and checking is finished. So what happens at that point is you draw back up to six cards.
Okay.
And then you start the new round. At the beginning of every new round, after the first round, actually no, even during the first round, during the first round, what you will have is you will have at least five cards on two discard piles and a face down this discard pile. Every player can look through the two discard piles. You can't reorder the cards, but you can see what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why that's important, I could do this, because
three down.
Yes,
I don't understand.
So I put three good cards down. And you've just watched me pick up three contraband in my hand.
Yes.
So you know I'm holding some contraband, but am I going to put it in the bag and force my way through it?
So you can draw from the discard pile?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. But the only rule is that you can draw from the face-up discard pile at any time until you start taking from the face-down discard pile. The moment you start taking from the face-down discard pile, the rest of the cards that you need to do, you need to fill up your hand to back up to six, have to come from the face down.
So I don't think I would mind taking the face down because that way it's a lottery. You don't
absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely. Sure. But also this is worth more victory points. So take your pick.
You may already have two cheese in your hand, okay?
Yeah.
And there are three cheese there. So what you do is you discard three other cards from your hand. Mm-hmm. So discard initially goes in front of you, face down.
Yep.
Then you draw those three. Yep. And then the cards that you just discarded, you distribute them however you like around.
Understood.
Now, if you see that, and one important thing to keep in mind is that everyone's market is face up and it's public. The only thing that is private is any contraband that you have. So contraband will go face down in your market, but everything else
is face up.
Is face up in various sections. Mm-hmm. Now, you can see that there will be people who will be going for certain goods because there are bonuses at the end of the game.
Sure.
Particularly if you have multipliers, yes.
Cool.
So you may see someone going for cheese and you have cheese in your hand, but you also have contraband. So what you may do is when you discard those cards, you may bury them under the contraband that mm-hmm. you had in your hand. So let's say you had two cheeses and two crossbows. What I would do, I would put two cheeses under and then put the other two crossbows on top. Reason being is that the person who wants those cheese
has to go through the contraband.
They're going to have to take the contraband as well. And everyone has seen them take the contraband.
I see. Okay.
So
it also means that now they have less cards in their hand. So if they go, hey, I just saw he had to discard two and he picked up a contraband of the two cheeses and he just called four cheeses.
The other thing I really like about this game is because you know what the penalty is for certain cards, you know what your limits are for negotiation.
Yep.
Okay. So, for instance, if you say there are four apples in there, the penalty for apples is two. Okay. So let's say you happen to have a mead in there as well. Okay. Now, if the sheriff checks it, the penalty you're going to pay is only the four for the mead. So, let's say I've got three apples and a mead card in there. Okay. And I say there are four apples. I can turn up to. It wouldn't make sense for me to hand the sheriff five because I'm losing one in the end. I'm always going to get those apples back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. However, I could always turn around to the sheriff and say, "Here's a couple pound." All right. There is once you realize that there is this element of thought that goes through your head as the sheriff, where you go, do they only have a little bit of contraband? Is that why they brought me so low? Or do they have like a ton of contraband and they're trying to make me think and they've only got a little bit of contraband in there?
Always the extra layer.
Like, there's all that stuff that goes through your head.
So can I tell a story about what happened in this when I was a sheriff once? So the gag at my table whenever we play this is is all bags will be checked, right? Whenever the sheriff, it always starts out with all bags will be checked, right? Even if they never all get checked, right? But the game, I came into the sheriff one round and went, right, that's it. If you give me 6 coins this round, anything you give me through. gets through, right? First person. All right, cool. Here's 6 pounds. I threw the 6 pounds back at them and popped them back. And I was like, what is this? Right, 5 contraband cards inside of their bag, right? Like, but you can only get away with it once. But if you time it,
that's
you
can pretty good.
The other story was, this. That was a great one, right? It's like, just caught one person now. It's got a really big, you know, whatever. The other one was to my cousin's wife, Maddie, right? We were playing this game and same thing. All bags will be checked. And I said, and I was very adamant from the word go, I'm like, the negotiations happen until the pop happens, but I don't have to hear anything out. And I, so my wife, Georgie, had negotiated and she'd bribed me with 3 things. And then I said, you know, thank you for your, like, I'm offended. Thank you for the donation and send it back to her, right? Maddie watched this all happen and then she goes, oh, he's just taking bribes, all right? So she comes up. Four pieces of bread, right? And as she's reaching for her bribe, I went bang and popped the bag right in front of her, right? And she's like, no, you have to wait for me to bribe you. And I went, I don't have to wait for squat, right? I can just, like, you're not ready. So she was, and then I played it the next way, which is the next time that she was sheriff, I knew just for vengeance, she was going to pop my bag no matter what, right? So I went, I legitimately planned it. So I was like, 5 apples, sheriff. Bang. No way. You're like, yep, there was 5 apples in there. I'm like, I knew what you were going to do, right?
So your hand limit is 6 cards, was it?
Yes. Yeah,
6 cards. And 5 apples is pretty unlikely.
And the most cards you can... Well, the thing is, though, when you start dropping cards, like discarding and picking up cards, it is possible that actually does start to happen.
That's cool.
So the last time I played this game, I played it as the most honest person ever. And no one expected that. And so my bag...
It's so good.
My bag kept constantly getting checked. And it got to the point that everyone was just bleeding themselves dry because they just keep paying his penalties.
This will be the one. Right. This will be the one
and then in the second last round, I can't remember what I said, but I remember I had nothing but contraband left. And my brother-in-law was gone. I'm not doing it. You see, you just said, I can't even afford to check your bag. I am so poor. And he says, all right, fine. And I'm just opened it up and put all the cards face down in front of me. And he's just swearing. And then at the end of the game, he's going to, like, how many, like, what was the penalty there? And I think the penalty would have been like 24 or something.
Yeah,
like,
it was like 60
or something.
Yes. When someone pays the penalty, does the money go to the player who gave them the bag?
Yep. Okay, yes. Cool. So, wow. So in the event of you having contraband or having anything that you didn't declare and the sheriff correctly checks it, you have to pay the sheriff.
Yeah, understood.
So there is this other thing as well where you're watching people.
Yeah.
And the moment they become sheriff, if they haven't played the game properly and they're poor, you are sending everything through because they cannot afford to be wrong.
So what happens if they can't pay the fees?
Okay, so in the event where a player can't pay the fee, the first thing that happens is that you have to use all your money.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're on zero cash.
Once you run out of money, it's goods. It's
you have to use the goods that you've snuck through.
Non-contraband goods. Ooh, okay, is the first thing, and you don't get change. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's the value. So it's the top right hand corner value.
Yep.
Okay. Once you run out of these, it's in contraband. And again, you don't get
changed. Start taking your clothes off. Is that right?
Pretty much. It's only at that point, if you have no money, no goods, then you don't have to pay the fee. I'll be perfectly honest with you.
We've never gotten to that point.
I've never seen it get to that point.
Yeah. Because everyone's trying to get cash.
But if you are at that point, you're done. Yeah. The game pretty much ends for you. But.
You start with cash, right?
You start. Everyone starts with a different. No, you. Everyone starts with the same amount of cash, and 5 cards in their hand.
Cool.
And then you basically go from there.
I can't wait to play this one.
There is an expansion, which is the Merry Men expansion.
I don't.
Great name.
I don't recommend. I own it.
You got to get it at King's Cross, right?
it expands the game up to 6 players. Don't recommend it. No. This game peaks at 4. It does game, also add in like the Merry Men who like, hey, you know, Robin Hood and his band. They've also got some now special things that happen. Like it doesn't need it.
Yeah.
You don't need it. This game is that's one of the few expansions that I'm like, I actually don't recommend playing with it at all.
This game for me.
Have you played with it?
Yes, I have twice and I don't recommend it.
This game for me feels a similar space as games like Coup.
Yeah, so
it's all about bluffing.
Yeah.
Okay. Coup is super quick. 20 minutes, the game's over, and And apparently everyone's the Duke for at least a couple of rounds. Okay.
Everyone.
Until someone has seven bloody coins in front of them, and then all of a sudden they're either the assassin or the contessa. Yeah. They're what one of the two. Right? Yeah, guaranteed. Yeah. But so this game is it takes a little bit longer, it's a little more involved, but because there is that back and forth with that one round where you know you're either gonna make bank and just annoy everyone at the table, or everyone else is just gonna get one over you. It makes it different enough but still super interesting and a ton of fun. I agree with Nate. The Merryman expansion just makes the game slower and too it long. Just takes away from the best thing about the game, and that is the negotiation.
Can you add a fifth player into this? A sixth player into this base copy, though?
I would.
You could, but you don't. It's like the amount of cards, you're just limiting the amount of cards that are out there as well.
Okay. Also, as well, this is one of those games that's a ton of fun to watch standing around the table.
Yeah,
I have had some of the best times just watching other people play and then chiming in going, they're 100% lying. You should totally check that bag.
Yeah, of course.
Shut up. It's so great. It's one of those games. It's brilliant.
Looking forward to playing it.
And again, because the rule set is so small, so light, so easy, I've handed this to kids. We've played it and absolutely got absolutely trounced in the game where the kid just looks at you straight in the eye and go, it's three apples, Dad. And you're looking at it going, is it though? Yeah.
Surely my five-year-old wouldn't lie to me in a game, right?
So
sounds great.
Sheriff of Nottingham, it's great. I've got the first edition here.
I've got the same as you.
Nee's got the same edition.
There is a reprint. I prefer the first edition.
Yeah, look, it's the.
But whatever, it's the same game.
It's the same game. My version is published by Simon and Arcane Wonders. This has been published by so many different publishers now. Sheriff of Nottingham is pretty much available anywhere. Grab it. It's fantastic.
I will.
So, all right.
Sold.
So that's going to bring us towards the end of our podcast. But before we wrap this one up, no discussion topic tonight because we actually have an announcement that we're going to be making.
Dun, dun, dun.
We've been teasing this for the past couple of weeks. If you've been listening to the podcast, the past couple of episodes, we said we had an exciting announcement. We've been working on some stuff on the background. And tonight or today, whenever you're listening to this podcast, is the time to announce it. So
now,
right now, flashing up on the screen in front of us, if you're watching on YouTube, you're going to be finding a poster for the Board Game Gateway's very first Board Game Day.
Hooray!
We're calling it BGEX or BGEX. And so BGEX is the Board Game Expo, and we're going to be holding it here in the southwest suburbs here in Sydney, near where we all live. And we have decided that it's time for us to host our own game day. We have Ralph, Damo, and I. We've been admitting a monthly meetup for our local group for a while, and we've decided it's now time to take that kind of meetup but make it a bit more grandiose. And open it up to the public and open it up for a full day event. So this is going to be happening on the
January 13th
from 9 a.m. till 11 p.m.
Good thing we have someone here doing all the admin.
That's right. It's going to be a 14-hour day. It's going to be held at the Campbelltown Catholic Club up in one of their rooms up the top. And we're going to be it's a full day event. So we plan on having in the evening, we'll have some Blood on the Clock Tower thing. So you've heard us talk about it enough. If you're interested in that, you can come and get that. We will be holding basically a whole bunch of board game tables. We'll have a board game library. We'll have volunteers who will be teaching us a whole bunch of different games. And the games we are going to be focusing on are going to be board game gateway game related. Not very basic games, but games that we can play in a relatively short amount of time maybe play with a lot of people.
I'll say Sheriff of Nottingham is going to feature. 100%.
Yeah, 100%. Our goal is to have fun.
That's
the goal.
And for anyone to have fun, really.
Yeah, that's right. Whatever game floats your boat, we can't guarantee every game is going to be there. That is mental. But what I do want to say is whatever board games you find fun, bring it. Play it. Teach it. That is the goal of the day. The goal of the day is for everyone to have fun and share with us your love of the hobby, just like and show as much love for the hobby as we have
and
for it.
Love for the community of this is what it's about.
We also want to open this up to people who may have heard of board games and maybe seen some of the stuff around the place and go, what is this whole thing? And that's why we say we're focusing on gateway games, but it's more so we just want to have a whole bunch of games there and people who want to play games and introduce people to new games. That's why we started this podcast. That's what we got into. That's how we got, how our families put up with us and how GooberCon came along with it, right? GooberCon started because I wanted to, the thing we've talked about, because I wanted to share it with my friends. And now it's an event they look forward to every year, and I want to keep expanding that to the general public. And we want to do that. That's why we're doing this as well. So tickets are going to be a base rate of $15. So that's, look, if you're willing to go to the movies these days and pay, upwards of $25 for popcorn and stuff, and, for 2 hours, you're going to get 14 hours of, board gaming goodness for $15.
And you'll have people there to show you these games exactly as well. Right. I know recently at work, I've been playing a lot of Six Nimmt. And playing that with the group started with 2-3 people, and now it's gone to about 10 people over lunch. They message in teams saying, hey, anyone want free to play this game? And it's just great. You see the chaos and the laughter that game brings. I want to see that here.
And again, that's one of the things that I really want to see on our game day is people having laughs at a table. I know I mentioned people are welcome to bring their own games. We will have our own library there.
100%.
The library will consist of some of our own personal games, and people and anyone with a ticket is more than welcome to come and borrow a game from the library.
They're also welcome to come and annoy us and say, hey, can you teach us this game?
Absolutely.
And the answer will be absolutely
yes. No, go find someone else.
We are mentioning that this is our announcement to the fact that we are doing it. The website is not ready yet. We plan to have that ready at the beginning of November. So tickets we plan to go on sale, so we will be doing our pre-booking and pre-ticket sales that will be going live in the beginning of November, so about 3 weeks from now. But we wanted to announce it now to let you know that it is coming. This is a, for us in here in Australia, this is a summer holiday, school holiday event. We want families and kids and people to come and join us and just join in the hobby. So we're really excited, and we hope that if you're listening to this, we hope to see you there, or tell your friends and family about it and get them to come as well. So we'd love that.
100%. Really excited for it. We'll be so it's January 13th at Campbelltown Catholic Club. The tickets will be $15, like you said. I will also be offering family tickets as well. So two adults, two kids for $50. Be very exciting.
Yeah, and the venue is a good one. There is parking available at the venue.
There is undercover parking as well, which is very nice. It is within
walking distance of Campbelltown Station, which is just, so for anyone coming in via public transport, it's also accommodating there. Anyone who happens to be driving in from interstate, there is even a hotel on site.
Literally right next to it. The Ridges at Campbelltown is right next door. It's part of the same building.
Also, there are available to try. There is Bistro, and there is a bunch of restaurants downstairs. Look, we've tried to find the right venue that is going to be accommodating, not only to allow games to be played, but just people to have a good day. So hopefully we have done that. Looking forward to filling out a room and just playing games and meeting some awesome people.
And look, this is our first announcement of it, but there's going to be more news to come over the course of the next month or two.
Yeah, so we're looking, and we already have a few lined up. We're not announcing them now, but I have got a potential couple of sponsors that we're going to be talking about, people that will be attending, and there's a few things that we're not going to announcing now, but that'll come as we have more information and we get closer to the date, so look forward to that. But BGX, we're very excited. BGX Summer 2024, really excited, looking forward to it. And with that, I think we're going to bring us to the end of episode 45. That was, these hours go by so fast.
I know.
It's great. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for your time. We look forward to seeing you next week in episode 46. Go to our Facebook page, go to our YouTube, click the like, click the subscribe button, click follow, all that kind of stuff. We are going to have more information gets released on the YouTube and our Facebook page as well. So go there, join the community. We look forward to seeing you then. But until next time, in the next episode, we'll see you then. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.